This is the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. Your hosts, Sam Harris and Nicholas Farik, digest the most interesting, informative, and topical books, giving you their biggest insights. We expose different perspectives and tools to look at the world to make you wiser than yesterday.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. I'm Nico, and as usual, I'm joined by my good friend and co-host Sam. And in this episode, we just finished reading the book Burn, The Misunderstood Science of Metabolism. It is a book written by Herman Panzer. And as the title suggests, it talks about metabolism, about food, about energy, about exercise. And it points to the fact that we have been thinking about this stuff completely wrong for a long time. Fundamental point that the book makes is that we've always thought that we burn on average, let's say 2000 calories a day. And if we exercise, we're going to burn more. And if we cut carbs, the amount of calories we take in is less than the amount of calories we have our base metabolic rate plus the exercise that we do, we'll lose weight. And so he proves that there's actually not the right way of looking at it. He talks about that. A lot of research with Hadza. Hadza are modern hunter-gatherers living in the northern parts of Tanzania. And so they do about 15,000 steps each day. They move about 4 hours a day. And he has found that they use the same amount of energy each day as your average couch potato in Europe or in North America. And so he makes a case that exercise does not increase our metabolism. And instead, we burn calories within a very narrow range. So about 3,000 calories a day, which is going to be depending on your size, etc. And so our matter of activity level doesn't really matter at all. The main points I found like very surprising because I actually didn't realize that at all and found it fascinating. So Sam, what did you think of the book?
I found that really interesting, but I also found that they still then go, they spend half of it like debunking everything and then the other half saying, well, you should still do all the things that there's with the original advice, being like, oh, exercise is so important. If you don't do it, you'll probably end up getting fat and all these other things. And you're like, well, maybe just like don't bother talking and just leave it because it seemed a bit silly in that sense. But it was really cool, some of the science studies. Like, I'm not sure about some of the things where they spoke about, like Michael Phelps, and he's had all these sort of things about his diet needing to have like 12,000-13,000 calories a day because he was doing so much intense exercise. And then they're like, oh, maybe that's not true. Perhaps he was only burning more like 6,000 calories a day. And well, that's still double what they said is possible for a start. And secondly, I'm not sure if that was even true because I did 2 weeks of cycling, like John O'Groats Land's End cycle touring, and I was burning like 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day, apparently, according to Strava. And I definitely needed to eat 7,000 calories a day just, and I lost weight whilst eating 7,000 calories a day. And like, I literally would eat like a cherry pie, like a family cherry pie, just sort of as a snack, like, and then like buy a Mars bar every hour and that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I wasn't 100% sure about some of those claims, but I do think it was pushed in the right direction of humans do sort of like homeostasis kind of trend toward a norm and stuff. And you don't necessarily have like the full, just because you burn calories doing other things, your body will go into more of like a resting mode and try and burn less the rest of the time. Certainly interesting on that side. And I enjoyed reading the book, like the stories, the way it was written was really pleasant and made me a bit nostalgic for my days in science and reading lots of stuff about people doing ecology and living with tribes and that kind of thing. So it was a nice book, and there was just like a lot of useful insights and debunking of things and stats on stuff that I was glad I read. So yes, I still thought it was kind of good overall. I was just a bit confused of what the message was they wanted to say, because I kind of wanted to debunk things and then say that you should still do them. And I found that a bit confusing.
Yeah, I agree. I think after listening to the book one time through, it was pretty hard to like boil it down to what the main points are. Yeah. And this is one of the criticisms I had for the book, is that it doesn't really give answers or solutions. Its main point is that exercise doesn't affect how many calories we burn. And so if you're overweight, the only way for you to, in a sustainable way, reduce your weight and lose fat will be to cut your calories. So that's the main point that the book makes. But it feels like there's so much talking around it that it's like it never really, I don't know. I was waiting for like a conclusion at the end, yeah, which we would like in a few sentences. Okay, this is how you should approach this. But I guess that's our job, right?
Yeah, there wasn't a take-home message, definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, they say that like exercise won't make you lose weight, but you will gain weight if you don't exercise. And so it's very important that you exercise. And it's still an essential component of staying healthy. and
I don't think that's true. So
they said that a few times.
Yeah. Okay. I must have misread.
Was in the book. I wish I'd like highlighted the bit when he said that.
Yeah. So as far as I understood, so he says indeed.
I
so
swear he said that a few times.
Yeah, it could be that maybe I misunderstood it, but like the way I understood it is that exercise will not make you thin, but it will make you healthy. And there's a few reasons for that. So one reason is, and this brings us to one other fundamental point that I found maybe even more interesting than the fact that we don't burn calories or extra calories by exercising, was the fact that we have like some kind of metabolic compensation system inside our bodies, which means that there's like your hypothalamus or something, which controls how much energy goes to different processes in your body. And so let's say that you burn 3,000 calories a day. For example, me, I'm probably about that. If I decide to go CrossFit training in the morning and I burn 500 calories doing that, that gives my body 2,500 calories remain to divide upon other systems. And this brings me back to our book on lifespan. Because in lifespan, he says that calorie restriction might be like a very good way to increase your longevity because it slows down processes in your body. And so it makes sure that your cells actually replicate or duplicate slower, which in the end results in you having less chance of cancers and in general, just aging more slowly. And there, I think, is where I could find the parallel between that book, so the book on lifespan, and this book, is that if you reduce your calorie intake or if you exercise, there's going to be fewer calories left for your body to give towards certain processes, and it will actually reduce the rate at which cells divide or replicate themselves, which will, in the end, be good for your longevity.
Hmm.
Did that make sense? Did you get that as well?
Or that makes sense. They do talk about that, but then they also talk about that most people, when they exercise, eat more. And they say half it's like the body compensates by changing metabolism. And the other side is like, oh, you compensate because if most people just naturally end up eating more and changing their diet. And you kind of, like, it's really hard to sort of regulate, like, the amount of calories you eat was sort of usually within 200 calories of what you need every day. Mm-hmm. And if you send someone on, like, a 10-kilometer run, it will still end up, they'll change it and, like, they'll adjust it higher. And it's just if you always end up, like, 500 calories over every day, that's when you start getting fat, or if you're always like a lot amount under, that's when you start losing weight. But if you're sort of within a few hundred calories in either direction of what you need, your body will just compensate on that.
Yeah. So what I understood was that the issue there is that the types of foods are very relevant in this discussion. So I agree. So the book makes a case that if you start sporting, like doing more sports, exercising more, your metabolism will slightly increase. So not too much, especially in the short term. So in the long term, it's going to go back to like a standard level. And so you'll start eating more. Your body will make you more hungry. And so one of the problems in our modern society is that there's two reasons why we tend to overeat. And this is one of my three main takeaways from this book. And so the two reasons we tend to overeat is, one, the fact that there's too much variety in what we eat. And so he always goes back to the Hadza. So there's the tribe that he followed in Africa. They have like five staple foods, and that's pretty much everything they eat. And there's days where they get like 80% of their calories purely from eating honey, and the rest they get from some tubers that they find in the ground. And some other days they just eat a bit of honey and meat and some tubers, etc. So there's not a lot of variety. And so in our brains, we have some kind of system where if you eat too much dessert, let's say, at some point you're not going to really be feeling like the dessert anymore. And so your sweet receptor in your brain that gives you like pleasure when you eat it is going to be kind of numb, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely would give that example the other way around. It's like if you've eaten too much pizza or like steak as your main meal, you're full, then you always have room for dessert. Unless you're one of those people that eats dessert first. Is that what you do? You go for your like ice cream first and then...
No, not really, but I'm a like not a sweet tooth and I prefer chips. So my dessert is chips.
Oh, wow.
So if I, after dinner and I feel like something, I usually grab like this thing. They're called Harvest Snaps and they're pea chips.
Yeah.
And they're freaking amazing.
Oh, yeah, they're great. I remember when I first found them, it was like ages ago in America, and I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for these to come to Europe. They're great. Cool. But yeah, definitely. Have you ever tried? I did this fruit diet where you basically have to pick one fruit and you're only allowed to eat that fruit for the day for 5 days. So like one day you only eat apples, one day you only eat like grapefruit or something. And okay, apple, 50 calories. I can probably eat like 20 a day or something. And after you've eaten three apples in a row, you're like, that's my meal. I can't eat anymore. and that's 150 calories. And
exactly.
And you're like, you don't want to eat anything until lunch when you eat another three apples. And you're like, yeah, fuck that. No more apple. It's really interesting. We're always able to sell you something else that you would be able to want. And that's how like capitalism works, in terms of if you can get someone to buy something and make them want it, they will. So there's always like a snack that actually you probably could handle. And you think so. And anyway, we end up getting fat and getting distracted from the book. But it's a tangent of interest, I guess, because it is just talks about like what is natural for us and things. And I quite liked them because they did that study.
Can I end my point?
They got people to exercise for a year. Oh, I thought it was going to be related. But yes, go for it.
Yeah, it's about like the two reasons why we still get fat. And so the one reason is the diversity of our food. But the second reason is also, that's your point about capitalism, where companies have made it so that the foods that they produce, usually the processed foods, are made to be overeaten because they want us to consume as much as we can. And so they make sure that, you know, all types of foods hit like exactly the right receptors in our brains to give us the maximum amount of satisfaction after eating it. And this explains why if I open a bag of chips, it is almost inhuman for me to be able to stop eating it and not finish it. So if you give me a Doritos, what is it called? Sweet chili. My God, I will eat that whole thing and I won't be able to stop.
Yeah, definitely. It's strange. But if you think about how much of the world is obese, it's kind of shocking. And I'm sure maybe in the future we'll look back as of how absurd it was. But it's kind of crazy like how many people are sort of really damaging their health and things. And we're starting to like look down on smoking already. But just the fact that we allow people to sold all these things and buy them and just sort of not look after the health, and yet then just end up in these like health crises where they have to like sort out their health. Sort of, it's kind of strange and taboo that you don't talk about that. Whereas if someone gets like a drug addiction, you're like, oh, you've got to go to rehab and all this kind of stuff. But it's much more like fat fighters, a bit more like you don't sort of have a, let's all sit around and tell you that you have to go to fat fighters. It's definitely more of a like, okay, if you felt like it, it's like, oh, good for you. Isn't that nice that you want to diet now? It's just an odd that it's sort of just like a human need that people want food naturally. It's just like, it's an addiction that you develop and like, oh, yeah, there's lots of strange things in the world around psychology of how stuff happens. And I'm not quite sure where I want to go with this, but it's certainly, I kind of ponder it and go like, there's something not right.
Yeah, because I was thinking about exactly the same thing while I was listening to the last chapters on the book, where we make certain types of drugs illegal because they're unhealthily addictive. And so heroin, like, it's illegal because the moment you start trying heroin, it just overwhelms your reward center and it makes you super addicted to that thing, right? Okay, so I understand why you would, as a society, ban that substance of being consumed by your members, because you know if people start trying it, they're going to get unhealthily addicted and it's going to ruin their lives. Okay, heroin, case closed. It makes sense. I don't think anyone, or there might be a few people complaining, but I understand why that was banned. Okay, for me, I'm still super surprised why there's still cigarettes being sold. Like, how can it be that something so harmful, because it's harmful on a personal level, because there's this secondhand smoke, passive smoking. If your parents smoke, it's horrible for your health as a kid. And then I think there's also, when we're talking about smoking, a very societal impact. And so I think these, for me, are interesting discussions to be had. Like in America, you know, everyone wants to be free and everyone wants to be able to, you know, kill themselves by consuming everything they want and running around with guns. At some point, when food also become part of this discussion, I can't remember, but I think he raises a point where added sugars and stuff should be taxed more, just to reflect, like, to, because in that way you can kind of shape what people will eat by making processed things calorie wise are way cheaper than non-processed things. Well, yeah, anyway, I haven't figured it out, but I'm a fan of the idea of taxing unhealthy things. But the problem is that the science needs to be very clear, because I'm not convinced that red meat is so bad for you, for example, but I think some people might, or even a lot of scientists say it is. And so they might want to tax that, although people like me might believe that it's actually pretty healthy to eat red meat. I don't know. That's why I'm not 100% convinced that taxing unhealthy stuff might be a good solution for any society.
Yes. So the study that I was going to say was the one where they watched people for a year and they said they got them to take on an exercise regime of running. And they found that it did stimulate people to eat more and they didn't lose so much weight and there's more maintaining. But men in the first few months did lose a little bit and then they sort of plateaued, whereas women all stayed the same. And they do talk about the fact that women in general just do need to have a higher percentage body fat, and their body isn't adaptive to change in terms of like when men go to the gym, like they put on muscles and like their body shifts much faster than women's, which was interesting. But it's still like women can get super skinny if they bother, or like can get fat or even kind of muscly. When you read the book, sometimes it kind of makes you sound like you can't even change anything about your body. And it's like, well, yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. So I still got confused by what the message is from these things, but it was still, I thought it was kind of a cool study and I found it a bit insightful at least.
His point is you shouldn't exercise to lose weight. His point is you should exercise so your body has fewer calories to expend on other unhealthy things. And so I think that is why the concept of metabolic compensation I found very interesting. It's that, you know, if you exercise, your body is going to use calories to fuel whatever you did. So it won't have that much calories to expend going to inflammation or something like that. And so I think quite a lot of us have inflammatory issues or like some autoimmune reactions to certain types of substances in our bodies. And I think their exercise could actually be a big help to reduce the amount of energy that is available for your body to attack itself. So yeah, that is, I think, why you should sport, basically, just to make sure that your body doesn't do unnecessary things.
But it is, as long as you don't eat a lot more, because I exercise to eat.
And I know, and that's wrong.
If I don't exercise, I just don't eat much.
Yeah.
And yeah, apparently so. So I should just always eat and then not eat extra when I'm exercising. But I just find it very hard because like, if I go to the gym, I'm like, damn, there's this hunger monster inside me. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I don't, if I sit down all day, I'm literally not that interested in eating. And if I'm traveling and I'm on trains all day or planes or things, like it's the easiest time to do a fast. I just, have no need to bother. I did like the point where they actually go into how many calories you burn doing different activities, and I just found that kind of interesting. And basically if you're just walking, I think it was 50 calories a mile that you burn, and if you're running it's 100 calories a mile on average for a average size male. That was, I can't remember, it was in like pounds and I don't remember pounds. But as you go faster and increase like the intensity of an exercise, like the more calories you burn per mile. And then swimming is like the least efficient in terms of per mile because of we're not really built at all to swim. So I think it was 300 calories a mile, which I actually thought was a bit low because I thought like swimming a mile actually takes a long time. It's quite strenuous. Whereas the easiest one is cycling, which is 15 calories a mile. And if you want to use cycling as your exercise to be use burning calories, then you want to do a lot more distance on cycling. Basically was the main take home from that, but I just liked seeing the metrics a bit there.
Are you sure that, because I understood that if you're walking a mile in 20 minutes or you do a mile in 15 minutes, there's no difference in the calories expended? That's what I understood, but you're saying something different.
No, so he says if you're going faster you burn more calories per distance. I mean, is this,
are you sure?
Well, it's not quite the same, but as in a car it's sort of the same as you have like air drag and so things, but that's different. But I think you are just a bit more efficient as you're going faster, a bit more inefficient even.
As far as I understood, I think when you're walking, when you're running, the air drag doesn't influence you because you don't go fast enough.
Oh yeah, it's not air drag. It's more intensity. And because obviously when you're running, you're explosive. So you're actually taking off. And so you're just putting more exertion into each meter. They sort of made it sound like if you're walking, it still happens a bit, but I still think it's within boundaries. I mean, if you went like super, super slow, like millimeter step, you might actually burn more just because of the amount of time it took. I don't know. But that's what they said, was that the more intensity you do it. So if you run a faster pace than the average, then you're going to be burning more calories per mile.
Then I think, I understood something different.
Nick disagrees. This is a really interesting
I really understood something
episode,
different.
But you basically just disagree on everything from what we even took home from the book, which I think goes into the fact that the book was just very torn on what it wanted to tell you. And I think we both took away different things.
Yeah, exactly. We should, we can look it up. I think, I don't know exactly where it was, but I'm interested to understand now because I might have completely understood it wrong. I'm interested to know. Anyway, next point.
Yeah, my next point was, it does explain the Dunning-Kruger effect on how that's been exemplified. That's probably not the word I'm looking for, but how that's been portrayed with dieting. And basically the Dunning-Kruger effect is that those that know the least shout the loudest. So people who are often like convinced of something but are actually a bit crazy think that they really know something properly and will like be very forceful about telling the world that this is the thing. And most diets that are a bit extreme, people that don't actually understand science and people that are raving about like why paleo is so good, or like even why vegan diets are so good sometimes, they won't necessarily have all the facts. And because they don't understand where it might not be wrong, they'll have the biggest voice. And so, and those that sort of try to understand all the facts often find that they can't understand everything, or they won't have a singular, clear cut, sellable like diet. So they won't feel that they're worthy of shouting about it. So you only hear about these things from the people that are willing to shout. And in this book, they tried to understand everything, and then they just couldn't come out with a clear answer to anything. And it's just a bit of a mess. It's like you couldn't sell someone the diet from this book because of me and Nico, who have read the entire book and we had like different take homes from it. But they do talk about the fact that like paleo diet is basically a myth. Like there's such different variety of foods in the population. So some were like super carb heavy, and like the tribe that they spoke about, like most of the half, well, a lot of the calories come from sugar and those kind of things. And others, yeah, they're meat. But even if they spoke about the Icelandic populations, which did basically exist entirely on like seal, so like meat and fat and no carbs. And yet they actually can't go into ketosis because they've actually developed a genetic mutation to stop them from doing that. So like trying to go into the ketosis diets to match that is maybe not representative of how the body should be, because of it's even been adapted for people that have a diet that actually shifted them in that direction. So yeah, it was really interesting, I thought, about the fact that most of these extreme diets in any form are basically just being sold by people that don't understand how dieting works or the body. It's also just a nice example of the Dunning-Kruger effect, next that portrays itself in many other forms besides just dieting. Mm-hmm. But was a useful thing to think about in terms of how you just take in news from the world, and that you really have a very unrepresentative sample of what's the actual truth, because you only see the people that are shouting who are bothering to get their message out, and that's mostly not the message mm-hmm. that you need to hear.
Yeah, but to summarize his points on diet, so I felt like he had like a personal feud against the keto / paleo crowd, because yeah. he was kind of going hard on that. And as I used to, or and still a bit lean to that side, I felt slightly personally attacked. But I forgive you, Herman. But he was also talking about like raw veganism, yeah. where it doesn't really make sense either. And he doesn't really have a particular issue with any diet. And so his point is the best diet is the one you can stick to. And so what he recommends is just try them all. And if you find one that suits you, where you feel good in, that makes it easy for you to cut or low calories, that's the one you should stick to. So the purpose of fat is your body like storing energy away for when it's going to be needed, right? And so actually he finds that if you have a high metabolism, you expend quite a lot of calories each day, or more calories than someone with a lower metabolism. And so let's say if you go to a week of non-eating, you'll need more calories to be able to survive because of your higher metabolism, which means that actually people with a higher metabolism tend to gain weight and they have more fat because their bodies need more fat as a reserve for when times are tough. So that's one thing that I would assume that people with slower metabolisms would be fatter, but it is the other way around, which I found pretty interesting. And so more point on that, metabolism is not optimized for looking good. It's not even optimized for being healthy. It is shaped by natural selection to optimize for reproduction. And here you can see big differences in different kinds of animals. And so, for example, if you compare a mouse with a mouse and a sparrow have about the same metabolism, but whenever a mouse gets cut in the energy intake, so if they don't get enough food or they lack food for a while, all their energy will be channeled towards their reproductive system. And so they will make sure that the reproductive system is still working. But that will also mean that there will be less energy available to go towards their longevity, so maintenance of their body, immune system, etc. And so there you can see that mice typically have a short lifespan, but a large number of offspring. And then if you look at the sparrow, which has the same metabolism as a mouse, if they go hungry, their system actually makes sure that they live longer and the less energy goes towards reproductive system and more energy goes towards protecting your body with inflammation, like your immune system. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, it's sort of two side of like short-lived, short-fast. So you basically just put all your energy into reproduction, or like long, you have like one or two units of, one or two children, and you put like a lot of focused effort and energy into it anyway, but also your body then sort of has energy for more like just maintaining and having a slow life and doesn't put lots of actual calorie energy into creating those, into reproduction in general. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a slow mode or a short mode, which is And then goes into the longevity thing as well, in the same way of like, if you're just trying to sort of be really fast with your life, well, be fast, just try and reproduce as much as possible and then spend yourself, versus double down, try and exist for as long as possible and don't put so much energy into reproduction on any given day, etc.
Yeah, exactly. So he found that the slower a species burns energy, the longer it tends to live. And so that again brings us back to the question, like, I always thought that having a faster metabolism would be good and healthy. And that brings us to the whole lifespan thing, is that actually having like a slower metabolism is actually better for longevity. And this brings me back to the whole survive versus thrive state that people and I guess animals can be in. And I was always convinced that someone that looked super healthy, like muscular, lean, you know, strong, that they would be healthy on the long run and they would probably survive long. But it could very well be that people that are very skinny, small, with slow metabolisms, that they're actually the one that are primed to live long because their whole system is slower.
One of the insights that I like was he speaks about honey and other sugary carby things that people sort of avoid, and they think like honey is like more natural and maybe is a healthy thing. But honey is literally just sugar molecules in water and is just as bad for you as high fructose syrup, which you have in processed jams and sugary drinks and things. It's just sugar. It's going to spike your insulin just as much, etc. Whatever it says on the tin of the different types of honey you can get and how natural it is, it's tasty and perfectly fine to have and put it in your tea or something, but still just as bad. And also linked to that is like orange juice is so much worse for you than oranges, because it's already blended for you and it's basically just sugary water going into your system, and so it spikes your sugar a lot faster than if you have a physical whole orange where you have all the fiber and everything with it. It just slows down the rate of absorption of the sugar and things. So just a health point there of basically eat oranges and avoid orange juice and honey.
Yeah. Interesting fact I heard, and this is not from the book, but in Hollywood, if an actor has to gain fat, they actually make them drink a lot of apple juice. Just apple juice is apparently a great way to gain fat very fast. So fun fact. And I'd like to come back to the point I made previous, because I just saw that I made one more note, which I found counterintuitive, and I love counterintuitive things. So if I ask you, let's compare Hadza warrior, someone living in Africa and hunting all day, to a couch potato from the US. Sam, who of the two has a higher testosterone level?
Well, the active Hadza person that goes around walking and hunting and things all day, of course.
Thank you for going with my question that you, after reading the book, hopefully know the answer to. So ironically and counterintuitively, the couch potato that has a higher testosterone level. And so he makes the case, and actually that's something I read in a different place as well. And I think we can also deduce that from the book Lifespan, is that lower testosterone is actually better. And this again brings us to the whole thrive versus survive state. If you have high testosterone, you're thriving. You know, there's abundant energy and everything in your body is focused on reproducing. However, if times are tough, your body puts less energy into producing testosterone, into reproducing, and make sure there's more energy goes towards maintaining, maintenance, immune system, etc. And that is actually what makes it that you will live longer. And so more exercise actually reduces your testosterone levels. And this has been found to reduce cases of cancers in reproductive systems. So it's good for your health in the end. And yeah, this is my last point on that. And in general, this is my last interesting point that I find in the book.
So what about if you're doing sort of weights and that kind of thing? So you're still going to have lower testosterone?
That is a question that I missed in his book. Exactly. So he talks mostly about running for long distances, which, yeah. And it doesn't talk about like high intensity interval training, for example. That's just like, if I would be able to ask him a question, this is my first question that I would ask. My final point is that I found it annoying that the whole book uses the imperial system instead of the metric system. So he's talking about miles and pounds, and I don't know what these things mean. So anyway, that is one thing I didn't like about the book. And also the fact that it doesn't really give many like solutions and conclusions. Like, okay, if you want to lose weight, I would do this, 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 and that. It's more like very general, high level, and you have to make your own conclusions.
Yeah, it's good to be scientific and ask questions, but it's also sort of annoying when you can't actually give an answer.
All right, should we do rating?
Yes,
go ahead.
Okay. I am going to give it a 5 out of 10 because I really liked a lot of it, but I just found it confusing and conflicting, and it wasn't a lot of random insights I found more useful as facts than the sort of the overall message. Like, I'm trying to hard to boil down what is the sort of the fact I'd want to tell people around being like, oh, you shouldn't even bother exercising because it doesn't make a difference, versus you really need to exercise because it makes a big difference, and seemed a bit conflicted. Although I did like the book of reading it, but yes, I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, again, we have a pretty different view. So first of all, I've always been interested in this stuff, and I've already done quite a lot of research. I've experimented quite a lot, even, you know, putting my body into ketosis to see how it would respond and all that stuff. And so I found this a very interesting book, actually. I think I like the main premise, the fact that exercise will not make you lose calories. And then the second point where your metabolic balance decides where your energy goes to, and the stuff where there's a thrive and survive system. I found it super interesting, and the ties back to the whole lifespan book that we read. I really, really like the book, and it is actually a book that I'll recommend to a lot of people. I actually planned on telling all my CrossFit friends, like, if you think you can do CrossFit and then start drinking beers every day and eat more, think again, try and read this book and it'll all become clear. Anyway, so I'm going to give it an 8, which is again quite a difference from you. Pretty interesting, but I'm glad we found a book where we like took different things away and where we could have some discussions and questions.
Yeah,
although
definitely.
We'll probably have to spend some time on seeing who's right.
Yeah, it's nice.
Cool. So yeah, it's nice. For the next book and the final book in this series on the human body, Sam and I will read the book Death by Food Pyramids, written by Denise Minger. And so as far as I know, I haven't started yet, but the book talks about different diets and specifically the influence that companies and politics have had on what we believe is healthy, which is also a topic that interests me a lot. So thank you for listening, and we look forward to the next book and to our next episode. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like what you heard, feel free to give us a rating and share with your friends. If you'd like to ask us a question or give us a comment, feel free to join us on Reason. Reason is Sam's startup that is building a social podcasting app. It is a place where Sam and I listen to podcasts and share ideas and insights. It'd be great if you would hang out with us there. Thanks again, and speak to you in the next episode. Cheers.